Hello, everybody, and welcome to Voxel Viewpoints. It is March 4th, 2019, and we're here to talk about some games. We've got a pretty rock-solid episode for you. We're going to touch upon Resident Evil 2. We've all been playing that. Lee is going to be talking about his experience with Far Cry New Dawn, and Derek is going to get all anime on us with God Eater 3. So before we get into it, just go around and introduce ourselves. I'm host Ryan Shepherd.
Hi, I'm Lee, member of the group.
And I'm Derek, also doing pretty well.
Cool. All right. As you may remember from last episode, I got a new graphics card for my computer, and with that graphics card came a free copy of Anthem for the PC. So I spent last weekend kind of diving into that a little bit. And, you know, I didn't hate it. I liked it a little bit more than I liked the betas and the alphas. Mostly because there's, you know, it fleshed out a lot of the stuff, like the story and everything like that. The shooting and everything was pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to keep going back to it, but it was fun to play in the way that I was playing it. I wasn't playing it co-op or with anything. I was just doing private missions and going in and completing the missions and doing what you do in that game, which is basically shoot things, and then at the end you get some loot. I did find it a little confusing trying to sort out the loadout system, like when things unlock and why I was getting things that I wasn't able to equip and stuff like that. But if you kind of dive into it a little bit and look at the loadout screen and the menus and stuff like that, it starts to make a little sense. I kind of ended up liking the story a little bit, kind of getting into some of the characters, reading some of the codex, and they made a pretty cool world. I just don't know yet if they're, you know, fully capitalizing on it. So I guess we'll see how that turns out, as they expand upon it. Any new updates with Anthem with you, Derek?
Not really. I've just kind of been trying to follow the news and sort out the bullshit from whatever's actually going on with it.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's kind of mixed right now, but like the people that are in there and having fun with it, you know, they're there, they're enjoying the game because that's what they like. Like we pointed out before, it's going to be, are you going to like this game? Do you want to see how it involves? Are you enjoying it?
Right.
Yes. Or no, you're just going to focus on the bugs and what the media is strictly pointing out.
Mm-hmm. Like how it's bricking PlayStation 4s?
Yeah. I've actually had one of the guys in my party, he had it freeze his PlayStation, but he just unplugged it, plugged it back in, and it was fine.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's if it locks it up like that, I guess it's like actually shutting down the PlayStation 4 completely. It's crashing and then, like, almost like you're unplugged, like if you're like holding the power button on your computer and it shuts off like hardcore, which isn't good for anything, especially if it's running in the middle of running a game or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I heard some people prior to the news kind of coming out about it complaining about the crashes to complete console shutdowns, but I hadn't heard anybody about it like you know, permanently damaging their PlayStation. So if that is happening to you out there, just be careful, because that would be a big bummer. And maybe hold off, and if it is happening to you, maybe hold off and wait for them to patch it before you keep playing, if you can. That's what I've been playing a little bit of that, and I think if you are somewhat interested in it, you should probably give it a chance. See if you dig it. But if it's nothing you think you'd be interested in, that kind of format of a game, probably not right now. But maybe they improve upon it. I've also been checking out Astroneer, which recently came out of early access after a few years. It was in early access, probably like 2 or 3 years, maybe even more. That's on PC and Xbox. I've been playing the Steam version. That game, I've been playing it right along. I got it in early access probably a couple years ago, and liked it then. The early access was definitely something they needed to do, because when that came out, it was definitely a little rough around the edges, but like the concepts were there. This is a survival crafting game, kind of in the vein of Minecraft, but it's sci-fi, and the cool thing, it's got a couple of cool things. The main cool thing is like the way you manipulate the environment. You have like this terrain manipulator tool that kind of, you can suck up the world and materials and stuff like that, and you can spit them back out, and you can kind of like you can dig holes, but then you can also fill them back in, and that lets you do all sorts of interesting stuff, especially when you go down into the caves and stuff below the planets, where you can kind of build ramps and tunnels and things like that to help yourself get around, because a lot of the tunnels are made for, like, you can look down into this big giant pit, but there's no way to get down there, so you got to make like a tunnel around the edge or something like that to help yourself get in and out, because that's where all of the bigger resource deposits are. And you know, you'll find things to research down there, and sometimes you'll find special tools and stuff like that you normally wouldn't get until you were a little bit farther along in the game. And the other cool thing is the way that it handles the survival aspect of it. This isn't like you're worrying about a whole bunch of meters like hunger and thirst and sanity or whatever. This, all you got to really worry about is power and like energy and oxygen, because this is like a presumably a planet without without oxygen on it, and you do that by laying down a string of tethers. So like you have a base that you start out at, and that generates oxygen and power, and then you craft tethers that will keep you linked to your base. So basically, you're almost leaving a trail of these things from your base to wherever you're exploring, wherever you're finding your resources. The tethers can also give you a trail back to your base, so you never get lost when you're exploring, and you know, you get lost in a pit or something like that and can't find your way back. And it's pretty generous with its difficulty. Like, if you do die, there aren't any enemies, but there are environmental hazards. Like I said, you can run out of oxygen, so you can die that way. And there are, like, poisonous plants that can kill you and things like that. So you got to be a little bit careful of that. So if you do die, you got to do a corpse run. So you got to go back and collect all the stuff that was on your backpack. But there's really no other penalty other than you just respawn back at your base, and that's it. I'm a bit into it, and seeing as I've had this perspective on the whole thing from when it first came in early access pretty much, and up until now, I'm going to probably do an extended one of these on it, or maybe a review, depending on how far I get. Because the goal apparently is to get off, eventually get enough resources and craft a launch shuttle to get to another planet. And there are like, apparently there are a set number of planets. There's like 9 or something, 7 or 9. Ooh. They're all in the, you can scroll through them and they'll explain what's on them. The planet itself is going to be procedurally generated, but it'll tell you what resources are on it and what kind of environmental hazards you're going to be looking at when you get there. And as they go along, it gets more difficult. I don't know exactly what that means, if it's like hazardous environments or, you know, more scarce resources. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm still on the first planet right now. So,
yeah.
And I think it looks good. It plays pretty well. And the controls are a little wonky. They're definitely something you have to get used to. But once you get used to it, it's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah. I played the early access version of it. I kind of was started with that loop. I think I got to the point where I was trying to make a more robust buggy, because you have to kind of bolt things to your buggy to make it run better.
Yep.
But it's a kind of oddly easygoing charm to the game, I find.
Yeah.
It's kind of...
Yeah, the music is very peaceful.
Yeah. And they're kind of weirdly kind of not really cartoony, but they're slightly kind of oblique figures and stuff like that. It's not really a realistic looking game. But it's an easy play, I find. Obviously, there is challenge to getting back when you end up straying too far, which you do sometimes. When I played it, you do stray a little bit too far.
Oh, yeah. It's like one of those things where you're going to make the dumb move and you're going to go too far away and you're going to run out of oxygen and you're not quite going to make it back or something like that.
Ooh. It's a good stress buster, I find. There's no real kind of...
consequences. There's really no...
Yeah.
No. So you pop in, die. No big deal. Yeah, it's just resources. Yeah. You'll get more resources.
It's one of those things. Without being cutesy, it's a nice game. I think I found it's just a pleasant play.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, I guess we're going to move on and talk a little bit about Far Cry New Dawn. Lee, do you want to jump into that and let us know what your experience is in post-apocalyptic Montana, as it were?
Sure. It's probably best to say it in context of other, because it's come out and it's been despite the fact people knew it was coming, it's come out as quite a low key release, I think. In a weird way.
I'd say that.
So it's probably best to say the context of the series itself and then other, I wanna say maybe expansions like that and where you come from. So yeah, it's described as a kind of a sequel to New Dawn. Obviously, if you've seen the concept of it, you end up having a bit of a nuclear apocalypse at the end of five.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think mostly because I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. I think the only way that it was projected to happen is if you listen to the in-game radio, there were like news broadcasts about some sort of thing going on in the world at large, and then all of a sudden at the end there's just nuclear bombs going off.
Yeah. So New Dawn picks up about 10 years after that, and kind of everything has gone, I don't know much about nuclear winter, but apparently it only takes 10 years for everything to go into nice pink blossom.
Well, I don't want to. I'll just touch upon this real quick. Apparently, that's a real thing that can happen. There can be in the aftermath of a nuclear weapon, nuclear explosion, there can be the opposite of what a nuclear winter is, and that there can be this huge explosion of plant life and color and stuff like that. I had the same thing too. I was like, why is it doing this? How can this happen in like 10 years after the nuclear war? But apparently it's something that can happen, which is strange.
So yeah, you're a government type. You don't really know much about yourself. And kind of you're thrown into this thing about 10 years later and you end up coming up against, the faction, kind of the big enemies, because obviously since 3 they have the cycle of these really flamboyant enemies that you only see at a few points during the game, but they make a big impact. They're quite good at writing their right in there, big bad villains like your Vats or your pagan men.
Pagan men.
Yeah, pagan men.
And of course the Seed family. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you will occasionally see he's in the promotional stuff. It's fine. You occasionally the father has a presence in the game still, so you still have that. But most of the things you're main protagonist antagonist in this is twins, these young twin girls.
Yeah, it's the Rye brother and sister, right?
I think the two sisters.
Those are antagonists, right?
Yeah, antagonists. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Sorry. And that's the kind of thing, and you go there, just kind of take them on like you do normal Far Cry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the context of Far Cry compared to the others, it's an add-on expansion to some extent. Maybe not as small as maybe Blood Dragon, which I think was about a 3 or 4 hour experience.
Yeah, that was a quick one.
Probably about, I would say, a $10, $15 mark, maybe, was it, when it came out?
Sure.
So, yeah. And this one's come out, and it's kind of, it's at the price point where, in the UK, to put it this way, it's $60 in the US is £50 here.
No, it's not. It's $40
roughly,
here.
Roughly. Oh, yeah. But, no, as a full-price game. Now, we're selling it here for... £40, which would be $50. But I understand you're only paying $40 here over there.
Yeah,
so we're getting a worse deal here than you are there. So it's essentially kind of a little bit off of a full price game.
Right.
And the game, I would say, is probably about a third of the length of 5. It's probably a good 10, 11 hour campaign.
5 can be a very long game. There's a lot to do in that game if you want to do all of it.
It's the same area, but it's still new. Oh, I can't remember what the place was called now.
Yeah, they used Hope County. They use the same map. Hope County. Yep. They use the same map. And they've been honest with that, which they weren't honest with Far Cry Primal, which apparently used the same map as Far Cry 4. Primal was a full-length game, though. There was a lot to Primal, and this seems more like a. Does it feel like it should have been like an extended DLC, or does it feel like it belongs in its own, package?
This is a tricky thing because the map is generally the same size as kind of. There's not much that isn't in 5 that you get. So if you want to explore and you want to hunt, you could hunt for kind of 50 hours if you want to. But it's a greatly diminished place because everything drops off. The settlements are far less.
Okay.
So you're doing less within them, but you still have that expanse to travel.
All right. Because imagining that huge map and then it's just less, it's just more sparse. With civilization anyway, is there anything to do in that extra space other than hunt?
You can still hunt. You still come across the odd skirmish and people wandering around out there. You still have that sort of thing.
Okay.
There's probably more roaming about than anything.
Yeah.
I'll get into this a little bit later because obviously you have these camps and settlements, which ties into your progression in a rather strange way. So, going back to the content of it, it's this a third of
Far Cry game, yep.
Yeah, Far Cry game. And you don't do the things that you used to. You still have the same loop of talking to the people to send you out, but it's all condensed into one area. You have a hub.
Okay.
And it's got everything in your hub, and you keep going back to your hub to keep getting sent back out again. So you've got this like little kind of community thing in the middle of it, and it'll keep sending you out, so you keep traveling forward and back, so the loop isn't as widespread, so you're not traveling out to meet these new people, you're kind of always going back, or you're going out on a mission to pick a new person to take back with you to the to your main base.
All right. So are you like loops. Are you like building out that base in any meaningful way?
You can expand it with the main currency for expanding stuff is ethanol.
Yeah.
Which is kind of stuff you pick up from. This is the thing where we start getting into the strange ways the game is built. I'll talk about how it's built. So it's generally, if you want to talk about the core of it, which is the combat type thing, it's still going to be Far Cry. It's still going to have that quite meaty combat type thing, that pretty good hunting system.
Okay.
But it has a strange way of you kind of getting your resources and stuff. So you'll capture camps like you used to, and then you'll get ethanol from that camp capture. And obviously, when you play that in the original Far Cry 5, your people will take that camp over.
Yeah.
And it will become a hot point. Not a hot point, a safe
yeah,
point.
like a safe house, safe yeah. location.
So
this in here you can choose to take them over or not, and then retake them over again, right?
Yeah. This is exactly it. So yeah, okay. you can forego your save point and your store, and then the more you go back, the harder the battle is to regain it again. The more the resource you get, but it's generally not that many of those bases.
Okay.
So the loop gets slightly wearing after a while. But this is one of the only ways you can get a decent amount of ethanol to upgrade everything.
Okay.
So,
and the ethanol is used to upgrade your home base, but is it used to upgrade anything else?
I believe you could use it to do weapons and stuff. Weapons. Okay. Vehicles and stuff like that.
Okay.
There's a lot more emphasis on loot in this one. Gears, things and stuff like that to boost up your stuff.
Loot as in stuff that you can use, or loot as in like materials?
Gears, that you can use suspension, just craft. There's a lot of craft back at the base. There's not so much on the fly crafted. The resource gathering is generally the same method, but for a lot of different things. Skins, hunting skins, are worth just money now.
Okay.
You can't use them to craft any new stuff. That's been kind of very simplified. I think that's the whole thing about it, is it's been very simplified, but not maybe in a way that feels satisfying to the game. In a way that it's kind of condensed it, so you're still getting the essence of Far Cry, but kind of just a lesser, we'll cram it into the 10 hours because you've not got 25, 30 to kind of build that thing.
When you say you're getting money, you're not crafting things with that. So how are the, so you're crafting weapons and upgrades and stuff, right?
Yeah, upgrades. There's no modifications on your weapons anymore. They've removed that as well. That's just now down to 3 upgrades per gun.
Okay. How are the guns? How are they? Because one of my problems with Far Cry 5 was there's a very limited number of guns, and I kind of use the same guns throughout the entire game.
They are absolutely exactly the same guns, but with a pink skin on them.
Oh, okay.
Exactly, apart from one weapon called a saw launcher.
Yeah, I've seen
which
that.
Is this kind of projectile ricochet thing, which you can upgrade. I'll talk about this when we start talking into the things I have problems with the game. So they don't ricochet, so they just stick into your people, so it doesn't cause havoc. And you can have more than one after a while. The saw launcher is fine. It's fun. It is fun, but it's very frustrating when it starts bumping against what feels like the more rushed nature of this. I'm not quite sure why this exists, to be honest with you.
Probably to make money.
I understand that. I mean, when you look at other similar things to this, I would not put this as a Blood Dragon, which is a very fun quickie.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this is more along the lines of Wolfenstein, The Old Blood, or...
Okay.
What was the Dishonored? Death of the Outsider.
Okay.
It's quite a substantial expanded DLC Not enough to make it a full kind of mini game, but kind of, it's still got a decent amount of content that you wouldn't get from just a downloadable title. It's generally Far Cry, but it seems a lot more kind of surprisingly lazily slapped together. Stuff like the general graphics, the environments look lush. They really look great. The cutscenes look really great and stuff like that. The kind of the big polished stuff is fine. When you start digging into kind of stuff like NPC stuff, it looks like something from the Xbox 360. It's very kind of a game of two halves. There's corners cut.
So what do you mean by that?
It just seems like they haven't spent much time on stuff like kind of movable assets, maybe stuff like characters and stuff like that
animation. Move around,
kind of just stare at you. Yeah, and it's very much, it's more kind of stock hands moving, like a kind of marionette type thing than it was previously, which really jars when you see the cutscenes, because the cutscenes look as good as anything in 5.
Okay.
So it's a, you do notice it when it comes crashing into your gameplay. Then when you get into gameplay, it's like, it seems like they kind of rushed the stuff, like AI and stuff doesn't seem very good. Enemies will literally just stand there sometimes, either they'll bum rush you, or they will stand there with their back to you and just let you pile into them. Your part, because you've still got the partner AI thing, where they follow you and they come out with you.
Yeah,
they have a terrible habit of running straight into your line of fire every single time you get into a skirmish, and you have to revive them. And when that comes into a real problem is when you play with the new addition, the Saw Launcher, because you'll fire one, either your partner will run straight into the saw blade and they go down instantly, or it'll ricochet eventually into her, so she's also taken out. They haven't really thought about that sort of thing. When you've got a ricochet weapon and you've got a partner AI that's going to get clipped and go down with one hit, it really kind of brings your skirmish, especially when you walk into a base you're not expecting everybody to descend upon you. It's really going to grind it to an absolute halt. It's like, I've just got into this and everybody's kicking off at me, and now I've got to revive someone because she ran straight into my saw blade. And stuff like that. That sort of stuff doesn't seem very refined. It's a case of kind of, it just seems incredibly rushed, but also had a lot of money spent on it to not much effect on it. It doesn't seem like a cheap game. It just seems like resources and not enough time. A lot of resources and not enough time. I'm not sure. Did Far Cry 5 sell very well? Or did it sell to expectations?
It was quietly one of the most successful games of last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I assume that might be why, because they've tried to... And also, another thing I find quite egregious is there's a Far Cry coin system which goes into it, which helps you buy extra weapons, kind of more powerful weapons and stuff like that. More powerful weapons are the same weapons you have. Anyway, kind of, in a microtransaction system, you will never get enough of the game, of the coins in the world.
Ubisoft games have had this kind of layer of microtransactions on them for a while now. Yeah. What's the difference between this one and the way they've appeared in the other games?
That you're probably not going to feel the benefit of buying these things when the game's only 10 hours. Was something you could pile into later when you want to kind of, you need the tough shit, but by the time you've generally upgraded your gun 3 times, so you don't need anything more powerful than that. So it does feel a little bit kind of very egregious.
So how can it be egregious but also not necessary to engage with?
Well, I say not necessary to if you want some more variety in your weapon, no, I suppose you, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I guess. But kind of, that's where the rest of the weapons are that you don't tend to pick up in the world that were in the previous games.
Okay.
So, yeah, so if you really want to beef up your kind of your artillery, then that's where you're going to find the best of the weapons.
Okay.
I'm not sure there's enough content to warrant you getting those things, but if you want to get the best experience out of a game you already know you like,
okay,
which is kind of play it with the best weapons you can, you're probably going to have to pay for it.
All right.
It's not the most outrageous. It's not like $100 for a horse skin or anything like that. So it's not awful, but it just seems a bit cheeky for a very slimline version of the game.
Yeah, no, there were some people that complained about some of the microtransactions in Odyssey, making it easier to level or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it feels like Ubisoft, they've had these microtransactions in their games for some time, and they just keep kind of like pushing the boundary a little bit to see how far they can get before it becomes too much. And I feel like this year, as not necessarily calendar year, but this year in the past like 12 months with Assassin's Creed Odyssey and now this, they've maybe found where, like, the extent that they can push it before the audience starts pushing back.
Yeah. Are we classing Odyssey and stuff like that as games of service?
No.
Or we've not got that far yet? We haven't got that far yet, okay.
No, I don't think...
Because this is the furthest from games of service you can get. And they're still putting the same sort of monetized things in. But no, if you say Odyssey isn't like that, then it's not really a fair criticism, I guess.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't consider Odyssey a games as a service. You can buy a season pass and they're putting out content for it, but there's no like consistent updates and consistent content like on a weekly basis or anything like that. They're just doing their normal post-launch support for it.
Yeah, so there's the gameplay side. Another thing I have a problem with is, again, this is down to production value versus time, I guess. The voice acting is incredibly good. You get the father back in a certain context, and he's as good as he was in the previous one, the creepy as well. Mm-hmm. That's great. The two girls are very, very, very well acted. Unfortunately, the story is terrible, and the dialogue is awful. There's no memorable. It's like everything. The script feels incredibly rushed, but they've got incredibly good people in to perform it. So, even the story is a satisfying.
That
push.
Seems like what the problem was with, in my opinion, anyway, Far Cry 5 is that they had like a lot of production value. They had a lot of great motion capture. They had a lot of those moments where the character was looking you dead in the eye and delivering their monologue, but what they were saying was garbage. Like, they weren't saying anything that was worth hearing or worth having this kind of lengthy. And that's disappointing because, you know, the series previously had, you know, some impact in that department. And especially last time with the setting that they were going with the cult and the militia and stuff like that, you kind of thought that they were going to take a few more risks with the story, but they kind of really didn't. It kind of fell apart and was a little flat in that respect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe you come to Far Cry for just a kind of crazy open world checklist shooter, don't care about the story and all that stuff. Is there something there, or is this kind of a dud in that respect too?
It's not a dud. It isn't a dud. If you just want to go out there and put around, you'll have kind of stuff like when you would get attacked by animals, like the honey badger type things that just come and fuck you up for no reason whatsoever. You still get all that sort of stuff.
All right.
What I don't remember quite so much is people burning you to death with Molotovs when they try to attack them with a weapon that's going to take you out and stuff like that. Again, it's that sort of thing where they have not quite thought it through, I don't think. And then you're trapped there. I'm being attacked by a bear and everything's on fire. Somebody please send help.
Yeah, wait.
My help's just set me on fire.
Yeah, Far Cry 5, more than any of the other Far Cries, felt like a game that was really held together by thread. The systems, all of the crazy stuff that could go down at any moment. It was just this insane mishmash of all of this stuff. And sometimes it worked, but most of the time what you ended up with was just this gigantic cluster of just never-ending, you know, you take out a Jeep full of enemies, and then there's another Jeep right behind them because it's on a timer, because they can't let you breathe for 2 seconds. And then some animal comes out of the woods and starts attacking everybody, and then all of a sudden there's an airplane overhead, and they're taking shots at you too. Yep. And that happened way too frequently. It was way too frustrating for me in that game. It's one of the reasons why I stopped playing it. I ended up picking it up later and finishing it up. But initially, that was a little bit disappointing that they weren't able to balance out some of that stuff. Because some of that stuff could be cool in like limited doses and having it feel a little bit more natural.
Yeah, but less structured, because once you kind of learned where everything was, everything came through at you in some sort of structure you could recognize.
Yeah, like I said, it was just like you could tell that Jeep that was on a timer, and no matter where you were and what you were doing, it was always going to come up with the intention to screw up whatever it was you were doing at that moment. And It was just frustrating because it was such a naked system that you could see, like, almost all the gears working behind the scenes, mostly because it just fell apart so often.
Yeah, it's crazy because I found here too when you were talking about how well it sold, like kind of as a sleeper thing, it was their fastest selling title in the franchise. And it was the second biggest launch ever, only being beat out by when The Division launched.
Well, their second biggest launch of all time?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
The first one was The Division.
Yeah.
Ooh. That makes it even less baffling, because I just don't know where it came from. I don't know why it's
It did kind of pop out of nowhere and felt like it was, like, really, really fast.
Yeah. I wonder if it was just going to be
less than a year.
Expanded DLC, and it just got a little bit too big, and they decided to make it its own thing. And in one way, I'm kind of glad they didn't spin it up into a full giant like Far Cry 6 release, because I think they really need to go back to this series and kind of reboot it in a way, kind of like they did with Assassin's Creed. Take a couple years off and like think about what Far Cry is and what it can be, because we've kind of had the same game since Far Cry 3. It's essentially been the same formula, with small tweaks here and there, but by and large it's been pretty much the same. And it's just, it's been too long. There's been too many games. There's been too many. The formula is wearing thin. It's fine to have a kind of crazy, silly, wacky time here and there, but as as if you're coming to it for anything more than that, then you're probably gonna have a bad time. Because the story is going to fall flat. The characters just aren't as interesting anymore. Like, they can't do another game where there's this big reveal about these charismatic, kind of crazy villains or something like that. Because even that's wearing out. You say the sisters are good, but I watched like the opening to that game, and the stuff that they were saying was not good. Like terrible writing. And
that's what I mean. The actual performance is good. The actual acting of it is good. The rendering of them in the scenes is good. Writing is terrible. Yeah, I agree with you.
The
writing is what really lets it down.
Yeah, the dialogue, the things that they were saying were just so bad.
Yeah, it just strips the charisma away from them.
Yeah, it was like cringy is what it was. It was just are they really saying that? That is the dumbest thing. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, it's not a one-off. It is not a one-off.
Yeah, that's absolutely throughout. Not. Yeah. All right. Well, that was the one I ended up skipping on the Black Friday in February, as it were.
Yeah.
Which was a bunch of stuff came out.
Yeah. I would suggest that kind of for the price point, especially if you wear it from work, which is kind of £10 cheaper than a AAA thing, I will wait till it's a good $20, I guess, 15, 20, and then have a look, because you're still going to get that core thing. But for the price point they're selling it at, it's absolutely... They should have done it at the same sort of price point as Bethesda did with their spin-offs, which was, I think, probably about $20 mark, maybe, $15, $20 mark. When they released those, they were quite cheap, weren't they?
I don't know.
I believe. Yeah, Death of the Outsider. I think they were relatively... I think here they were classed as like £15, which would probably be about 25 there, I guess.
Yeah, about 20, 25.
So, absolutely wait. For the price they're charged at, it's absolutely not worth it. And it does feel like they're kind of winding down for a while.
Okay.
It feels like that's as far as it, unless they're going to try and do something like a Primal. It feels like they're not done with it, but it feels like we're slowing. We've gone as far as we can with this kind of.
Yeah, yeah. I hope
this
so.
This loop of it.
The next time Far Cry comes around, they've got a. All right. So we're gonna move on now to Resident Evil 2, AKA Resident Evil 2 Remake, AKA very completely different game than what Resident Evil 2 was, but I'm sure there's some similarities. Lee, you have played both, and you've played quite a bit of this new game. What are we getting into here?
Well, what we're getting into is, obviously, it's not the first time we've had a remake with these things. We've had it with 1, which is kind of the same template as the original to some extent, but with much... So the fixed perspective kind of thing is still kind of retained. This is quite different. This is taken it out completely. So it is a complete remake with a different story. It's over the shoulder, very much in the style of Resident Evil 4, but with more movement, because in 4 you have to stay. Here you can move around a little bit and kind of a risk and reward type thing to combat.
Yeah, they let you move around in 5, right?
No, 5 you were still stuck. 6 you could move forward at quite a slow pace.
All right.
But it didn't matter. They just melted underneath your weapons anyway. So it is a much more substantial remake than the remake of 1, which is the one you recently played yourself.
Right,
so it's a much different experience.
Mm-hmm.
The story is relatively the same. You have this sort of concept where you're one of two characters that get split at the beginning, and they go off and they have their own experiences in their separate campaigns. And
yeah,
occasionally
you got
meet in the
Leon
middle
and Claire,
around the
right?
building. Leon and Claire, yeah. And then you'll occasionally meet up and you'll kind of do similar puzzles around the same thing. And it's generally the same setup as the original version. There's a concept, if you finish with Leon, you could play either you play the first scenario in completely, you'll have deviations, but it'll be the same through line in the first scenario that you play. So once you complete the first scenario, you'll end up playing a second scenario, which is a kind of a different take on it. You'll see the other sides. Very difficult to explain, isn't it?
So basically you choose either Leon or Claire for your first playthrough, and depending on which one you choose, the some of the story is a little bit different, but most of the game, and this is like the most game there is, basically, is playing through as either Leon and Claire with their narrative through line. And then after you complete that playthrough, you then have the option to play as the other character with a few moments where they meet and a few other perspectives on the events that happened in the first playthrough. And I played a little bit of Claire's second playthrough, which would be the counterpart to Leon's full playthrough. And so far, there's quite a bit that's different with the police station. Items are in different locations. Like, there's no typewriter in the main lobby, which there was in Leon's main playthrough. That was like a safe spot that you kept coming back to, and it's no longer that in Claire's playthrough. Like, it seems like it's a faster game as well. Like, not faster as in the movement is faster, but the pace is picked up, because it seems right off the bat it's more difficult, in my opinion. I'm running out of ammo a lot faster than I did with Leon. And like, I'm probably like an hour in and I've already encountered lickers. So, which didn't happen until probably like 2 or 3 hours into Leon's campaign, you know, depending on how fast you play. But that's generally when it happened. That was kind of like a big reveal, like, you know, farther into Leon's story. And so that, but some of the puzzles are the same. Like, I still need to find the 3 medallions to open up the statue in the main hallway. So I'm not sure how much it deviates. Lee, you probably have more insight on that, because I know you've played through at least a good chunk of some of these second playthroughs.
Yeah, I have. So yeah, it is kind of, you'll see. Like I say, the first scenarios are relatively on the same through line, but you'll go to your own independent thing depending on what character you are, but they'll go into the same through line. And you'll see the character, best way to describe it, you'll see the other character that's in the game, you'll see them on a monitor.
Right.
And scenario B is what would be on the other side of that monitor, if you could explain it like that. Mm-hmm. So you will literally see...
To an extent,
the,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, in the original, things you did in scenario A would be zapped into B. So there will be a thing in the original where you go to a locker, and if you've got a choice to take either a backpack, which greatly builds up your inventory, or a machine gun. You can only do one.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of leave one for the other, and that will arrive in your B, which was quite innovative back in the PS1 days.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. A does have ramifications on B. This one, it doesn't do that at all. Almost to the point where everything you do in A has no effect on B whatsoever.
Yeah.
You will do the same puzzle again. You have to unlock the same door that Leon must have locked on the way through again.
Yeah.
There's a character in there that you see that will turn into a zombie, and essentially you kill him twice.
Yeah.
You will kill him in the first one, and he'll be back in the second one.
Yeah.
It's very disappointing for a real fan. It's one of my big gripes, is that there's no reflection from the B, because that's the whole thing of it. It's kind of getting the full thing once you've completed both sides.
Yeah.
And it is quite disappointing. You'll see a helicopter crash through the same piece of building twice, but in different...
That makes sense, though, because then you, like, when you played through as Leon, that helicopter crashed, and then you immediately went down and met Claire, and that so then... When you're Claire, you know, at that fence scene, stuff like that makes sense. But the other thing you were talking about with, like, the fact that you have to do the puzzles over again, or like, there's still ammo on the table or something like that. Ooh. Like, of course, if I was Leon, I would have definitely grabbed that ammo before Claire would have got there. strange things like that, like the fact that there's no typewriter in the lobby, even though in Leon's there is. And by the way that these the stories overlap, you're only talking about like a few minutes, right? It isn't like this isn't like 3 hours later or something like that. You talked to Leon in that fence, then you went and you did something else, and you immediately got through that door. So you should see Leon there. Like, you should come across him, because he would have still been in that area exploring and checking everything out. So yeah, it is a little weird in that respect, and I don't know. I haven't gotten far enough into it to really know whether or not what they were going for, if that makes any sense.
What's kind of interesting too is I started with Claire, and I have the typewriter in there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yep.
You got that in the AI scenario. Yeah.
They're always been the same thing. Flip it between the two.
Yeah, it might be more of a deal breaker for somebody that kind of grew up with the old one, which Ryan hasn't. So it might be just a silly inconsistency for someone that's going in, not having the experience. That's just a silly story thing. They should have ironed that out. Pisses me off. It's like they nailed it so much that the ramifications of the first and second one, that now they dropped the ball almost all of it. So yeah, there's things like that that are frustrating. But I think that's the only thing, the only ball that it really drops. I think it nails pretty much everything else it aims to.
Yeah.
In the style of gameplay, in the style of tension. Resident Evil, being a fan, it's supposed to be a horror game and there is creepy bits in it, but generally they're quite cheesy. They're quite cheesy horror games. This is absolutely terrifying at points. The tension is really ratcheted really high. And I think that's to do with kind of the way the kind of the de-emphasis of combat. It looks like it's a Resident Evil 4, but it doesn't play like it at all. You would be rewarded in 4 with headshots. You pop a headshot, that's great. Here, if you try to, it actually kind of doesn't want you to take the combat approach, because if you're trying to give them a headshot, you're going to waste 6 to 8 bullets that are very rare, very limited. It doesn't really want you to take them on and start capping.
Or sometimes one.
Sometimes you get a lucky pop and it'll go pop. Or where your weapons get upgraded. It treats you later when you get better guns, and then you can get those juicy headshots, and it's very satisfying.
Yeah, I mean, like the Nighthawk, Leon's Nighthawk was like a headshot Lightning master.
Hook, yeah.
Lightning Hawk.
And then
whatever
it gets quite fun.
Yeah,
it's satisfying, but then they really reduce the ammo, so you're still not getting the benefit of that. You're not capping everything. You'll probably get 7 or 8 every like half an hour.
Yeah, and every bullet needs to be a headshot, or else you're going to be running out.
They're quite visceral zombies. Zombies are scary again. Zombies haven't been scary in games for a long time. They're on you. They move very realistically. Mm-hmm. The graphics are amazing. I think the graphics are fantastic. It's probably some of the best graphics I've seen in a long time. This with this new Resident Evil engine.
Yeah, it's been RE amazing.
Sometimes it's uncanny valley. Sometimes things shine in the wrong ways and there's like too much wetness on stuff, but there's a sense of realness to the environments.
Yeah, I think the environments look good and the lighting is really good, especially with your flashlight. They deliberately kind of make darkness not 100% black. It's kind of like this kind of like, it looks like it's washed out, but it's not. It's the way that it's supposed to look, which allows you to kind of see what's there. So if there's a little bit of movement, it can catch you off. It can catch you off guard and make you think there's something there when there isn't, or maybe you see something before it attacks you or something like that. So I think all of that works good.
Sometimes you'll see strange things on some of the faces where in cutscenes, maybe the faces don't work properly. Sometimes they do. There's a character called Marvin, and he talks to you at the beginning, and he's in pain, and he's trying to explain to you what is going on. And he's got these things, and he's blinking at you. He's quite intently staring at you. it looks great. And sometimes it's not that character, and then they've got too much teeth when they're talking and stuff. It's like, it's quite inconsistent with the facial capture, I think.
Yeah.
When you see clones, it looks great.
I just thought some of the character faces and stuff like that were a little off. Not crazy, not like, holy crap, this looks completely out of place or something like that, but just a little bit. Other than that, I can't really complain too much about the visuals. It looks really good, and they're able to scale it at a way that it at least tries to stay at 60 frames per second the whole way through. Ooh, which is pretty good. I've been playing it on an Xbox One X, and it's been pretty solid. A couple times where it's slowed down here and there, but it stayed almost solid throughout the whole playthrough.
Ooh, yeah,
it's been about the same experience on the PS4 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
I guess before we move away from visuals, there's a weird thing where certain environments very clearly have a certain color temperature to them. Like you'll be walking through like the hallways of the police station, and it'll be dark, and you'll have your flashlight, and then you'll walk into the lobby, and it's warm. Ooh. Like the color temperature is very warm, and there's like a clear transition there, and it's strange. I've never seen it in a game before. Like, I've never noticed it so deliberately in a game before, and it's very strange. I don't really know what the deal is there.
No.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that too much, but like Leo was kind of mentioned earlier, like the stuff that looks wet, especially like in the main lobby, sometimes when I come back, and if you turn at a certain angle, like the walls will just get really bright and like shiny.
Yeah, they'll like shimmer.
Yeah.
There's a strange shimmer on floors as well. When you see the reflection of the walls on the floor, it kind of almost like static grain.
Yeah, but it's only like
grain
in areas that are fully lighted. But anywhere that has been like dark has been like absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and the casting of shadows through the and stuff like that. That's great. But yeah, sometimes when it is in bright light, like the main hallway. The main hallway is the worst time I've seen that weird kind of grain on the floor where it wigs out the reflection. Depending on the way you look, if you're looking straight at it, it won't do it. But if you look to the side or look down or
up, that's what I was saying. Kind of when you turn, or if you're going up like the steps there, it usually catches as well.
Yeah. I think going from visuals, audio is a big part of this game. A massive part of this game. The binaural audio. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, a bit more narrative, I feel, in maybe Hellblade. More of a narrative thing, wasn't it? The binaural voices and stuff like that. But this is used as a gauge of where certain enemies are around you more than I've seen in a lot of other games, I think. Like you could hear the scratching of a licker on the ceiling and stuff like that, so you know exactly where they are at any given time and stuff like that. You can hear whether Mr. X, which is a big villain that comes in after, and basically Falcon punches you into the future.
Yeah.
You can hear whether he's above you, a floor above. You can tell whether he's one or two floors below, depending on how they balance the audio. I think the audio really kind of ramps up the tension on this.
That's
really good. Really good audio design.
Especially with Mr. X and the footsteps. Because once he makes his entrance, he's there, and he's very much stalking you, and I'm sure it's that there's a little bit of cheating going on, but it feels like he doesn't just like all of a sudden show up on the other side of the door. You'll hear, if you're paying attention, you'll hear the footsteps, and you'll know that he's in the vicinity. That was definitely probably my favorite part of the game was when he was stalking you, and you had to come up with these solutions to Get away from him and make sure you don't get your head pounded into the ground. And just his presence is so ominous. The way he just, like, Terminator style walks down hallways without giving a shit. Basically, you could be shooting him. You could be doing all this stuff to him. And he's just like, dush, 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 coming right at you. I didn't find him too hard to escape. He's kind of easy to trick and get caught up on. Like environmental things and stuff like that. So I never really got caught by him.
On the swing.
But he was always there to kind of like fuck with you on whatever you were going for. Like you had to get to this particular spot. So you're like, okay, cool. I know exactly how to get there. Right. Because you'd spent so much time in this police station that you knew which doors went where, you knew exactly how to get to, where you were going. And then all of a sudden there's this roadblock there that could show up at any moment. And he always would. You'd always be like two doors away, and then he'd be on the other side of the door that you needed to go through, and you'd have to find a new way around.
That said, I
don't think the ultimate conclusion to Mr. X is all that great. You fight him at the end, and I didn't think that was a particularly good fight.
You see, Slum is like different from him from the second scenario, which suggests there's more than one.
Oh, okay.
Because there's something that happens. Actually, it's in the trailers. You'll see one of the enemies punch through him. And it punches through his stomach, and it basically takes a chunk out of him. He's dead. He's gone. That's actually in one of the very first trailers. It punched through Mr. X, and it's like when someone's at the cell bar, like a lift door, they punch through his dead. So it suggests there's more than one of them, because when you play the original, it doesn't show you, because it is very, very slavish to the original kind of with setups. There's a helicopter that goes underneath, and there's several tanks of these things. Strapped to the bottom of a helicopter, they just drop them in, like airdrop them in. So it suggests that there is more than one. But yeah, going back to Mr. X, I kind of role played it a little bit. I played it very slowly, and you work out after a while that he can hear your footsteps if you start moving too fast. So again, it's the big thing you take for this game. It's the risk and reward thing. If you know you're in the same corridor as Mr. X, because you can also lickers are deaf, blind rather. And they can't hear you if you walk slow at all. And you can technically just look at them, because that's the right pace to get past them. Look at them with your shotgun and aim. And that's the right pace for him not to hear your footsteps. Kind of. Because they can fuck you up, because they can do you straight away and it's lob your head off.
Best not
to tackle them at all.
They're definitely, later. In my opinion, the most dangerous enemy in the game, more than Mr. X.
Yeah, I rage quit Sunday because of the liquor that I didn't realize was going to be there. I was getting the third medallion. I turn around, there's a zombie. So I was like, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden, the liquor just jumps from the top. And
I know where you were.
I was like, fuck, really? Come on.
Yeah. So kind of the tension of hearing Mr. X coming behind you, because you know he's coming from that door, and you've got two liquors on the ceiling that can't hear you because you're walking too slow, and you know you have to book it. But as soon as you book it, one of those things are going to come and just lob your head off with their claws. The tension is really, really high. Do you just run and hope for the best? Do you keep creeping and hope he goes the other way and walks away? Because if you don't make... And I think it's probably one of the more tense horror games I've played in quite a while.
They do a good job
of balancing the action and the horror / tension. That kind of stuff. They do a good job there. It feels really good to play. I think that's probably the most important thing here.
Yeah.
Is like they nailed exactly how this feels. You know that if you die or you screw up, it's probably your own fault. It's not like you're fighting with controls or camera angles or things like that. Like you walked into that room and there was liquors there, you weren't careful enough, and they killed you. Ooh. It wasn't like, yeah. You were, the camera angle wasn't right, so you didn't see him there, or something stupid like that. Ooh. Yeah.
Or that, the zombies. If you're like kind of like headshots are out, no headshots. Don't, unless you've got a powerful gun, you're gonna waste your bullets. Best thing to do is kneecap. If you're trying to kneecap them to drop them to one knee, or go. If you miss it, you know it is a risky thing. So, like you say, it's your own fault for trying to take that shot. You should have just tried to get past. It doesn't kind of. It's not a fault of the game if you screw up and it fucks you over, like you say.
Yeah, I never really had a problem with ammo taking out the zombies, like going for their head most of the time. Mm. There were times where I definitely, like I would do a one-two shot combo. I would cap them in the knee, they'd fall down, and then I'd take my shotgun out and blast them in the head, and that did a pretty good job on them. There was probably like 3 or 4 times throughout the whole game where I was like really anxious about the amount of ammo I had. And you know, I did full exploration, so I found all the gunpowder that you could use to make more ammo. Made sure that I had all of the, it like checked every room, 100% cleared it, because the map is really good. It'll highlight, like, if a room is red, it means you haven't found or done everything in that room yet. And then eventually it'll actually populate the things that are in there. So if there's like a box of ammo or a thing of gunpowder or an herb, it'll actually show up on your map. It'll track what doors require what keys, or whether it's just plain locked, like you can't get into it, or if you need the spade key, or if you need a crank to open it up. It'll keep track of all of that, almost to a point where when I was playing it, the flow of the game was I would go into a room and I'd check it out real quick first, and then I would just hit the map button and it'd be like, oh, still red, so there's still something in here. And then I found myself going into the map more frequently than I wanted to because of how useful it was. Because I wanted to make sure that it was, you know, I 100%ed, I got everything I could get out of it. I don't know. On one hand, I think it's an amazing way that they handled the map. I think it kind of, in a way for a game like this, a little bit revolutionary. But at the same time, yes, I think that it enables that a little bit too much, that constant map flipping, going into it. Okay, 100%. All right, I'm done. 100%, yeah. Not 100%, gotta still stay here. So it kind of left, like I wasn't really poking around. I was relying on the map to tell me whether or not I was done or not. And I don't know. That was just something that I came across.
Now, I believe, because obviously it's a hardcore mode, which plays like, because there's an auto-save function. You could use typewriter to manual save, but you also get auto-saves.
Yeah.
There's a hard mode in there, which removes that and makes it play like the original version, where you have ribbons, and then you have limited ribbons, like the remake of 1 and the original one of 1.
Right.
I believe, if I remember rightly, that they actually take that map thing out. The map signaling thing as well. It just makes it like the original one. If you, it won't flag everything. It won't flag if there's something in that room, if I remember right.
Okay. Does it do? So it kind does of it tell you it if it's 100% complete or not?
Nope. I don't think so.
Okay. Because the original Resident Evil did that. The remake of Resident Evil. I don't know if the original did, but the HD remake at least told you. It didn't tell you what was in that room, but at least told you if the room was 100%.
Oh, great, complete. Or clear. Yeah. I think it doesn't let you know that there's actual specific items in there.
Okay.
But, yeah. Well, I know it doesn't do that, but I don't know about the color change, I must admit. Okay. But, yeah, the actual signaling stuff is in there. Because you can tell that there's, like, bullets in the corner.
For me, it was definitely just the color. Like, When I walked in, if it was red, then I knew that there needed I needed to stay in there and keep searching around, and then it would eventually turn blue. And you know, I just kept flipping back every time I picked something up. Flip, check the map. Okay, I'm done. Yeah. And it like I said, it just kind of stifled my own exploration, like my own analysis of the room, like poking around in every corner, investigating everything. For instance, there's a morgue that you go into, and of course the game makes you pull the bodies out of the freezer in order to check and make sure you've collected everything, right? And there's like, let's say, a dozen bodies in there, doors that you can pull open. So you go in there and the room's red, so you know that there's something in there. And I go over and I go over to one of the things and I pull it out, and there's some, there's an item there, so I pick it up, right? And then just haphazardly, I go to another one and I pull it out, and there's something else there, and I grab it, and then that room is blue, and I know I don't have to open up any of the other things. Where if it wasn't, if it wasn't that informative, I would have opened up every one of those, and I'm sure I would have found some zombies. I'm sure I would have found something interesting. But I didn't, because I knew that that was done, and the anxiety around opening up one of those freezers and having a creature jump out at me was enough to make me say, okay, I'm done here, let's go. So it's just things like that, and like I said, constantly flipping back to the map. It's the same thing that I get with open world games where I'm trying to do collection quests and stuff like that, where I check the map every 2 seconds, because that's how that's what you need to do in order to get those things done. And I just found myself doing that, and this wasn't even like an open world collection game.
I think it's one of those things that they have there, much like the original one, because which you obviously recently played. It stops the loop of kind of retracing the steps around the house. It stops it from becoming incredibly frustrating.
There's that, like,
drag.
There's definitely there's definitely a use to it, and I understand. I just wonder if there was maybe, like, maybe instead of every item, maybe it colored it if there was like a progression critical item, like a key item in there. Otherwise, it didn't do it. Or like maybe if you spend enough time in that room, it would populate it with the icons. But it wouldn't say whether or not it was 100% or not 100% if it was just like a box of ammo or an herb or something like that. Only if it was just like a key or a medallion or something along those lines. Just something to make it be like, I don't keep flipping back through my the map so much. Because that was like probably the second half of that game for me was doing that once I figured out the flow of it. And there was nothing, there wasn't really like anything like suggesting I shouldn't. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it, there was literally no drawback to it, because the map comes up so quick too. It isn't even like there's a load or I need to go through a menu. It's like you press the button, you're immediately to the map, and you press it again, you're immediately out of it. So it wasn't even like an issue in that respect.
So overall, kind of now, I'm probably a bit biased by it. So I'll say what I thought of it. Now, you haven't played many of them, but you've played probably the best of the series. You played one, or the remake of one. You played four. Where do you think? Because obviously they are very kind of significant games. Where do you think that? Do you think this stands up well against them?
I'm not ready to get into that right now. Before we do that, because I've got something. I've got something. What overall? What did you think of the story? Just as a general overview, like, was it good? Was it bad? Was it on par?
Well, like in the original ones, there's the I know what I'm getting. I'm going to get a little bit of cheese, a little bit of kind of high sci-fi type thing, high kind of camp drama type thing. I think it does a good thing of taking a lot of the camp out of it. I think they still got some silly moments, big monsters with eyes on there, and kind of and weird dialogue choices.
Yeah,
but I think it plays it admirably straight. A very silly concept, quite straight.
Like Claire and Leon talking through a fence. So, how are you doing?
If only she said, "Could you help me climb over this fence?"
Right.
Yeah.
Like
that's literally just above her head with no barbed wire.
I think my favorite part is when she leans up against the fence, like she's just trying to be like super casual. Like, so how are you doing? Like, what's up? What are you doing here, huh? Fancy meeting you here or something like that. Like they're trying to be flirty or whatever with each other, and it's just like, dude, there's fucking zombies everywhere.
For a while, then he meets Ada, and then it's like that distracted boyfriend meme.
Yeah,
he forgets all about her until the end of the game.
Like, right? Oh, yeah. You. Well, yeah. That's the other thing where that kind of goes.
Yeah. So the story is quite, it's quite interesting. I think the atmosphere is in the extra context stuff, the notes you find, the kind of the extra storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think that is a lot better than it has been. I believe they've got more because the last seven was written, because normally they're written by a Japanese and translated into this. I believe seven was written by the guy that wrote Spec Ops: The Light. It had a decent kind of not quite so stilted story, not quite so stilted dialogue. And this one, I believe, is also written by Americans and then kind of. So it doesn't have that quite kind of slightly off kilter dialogue or those slightly off kilter notes. Yeah,
like bad translation. Like there's no Jill sandwich. Yeah.
No, there is no Jill sandwich. You're right. Jesus. But yeah, so they take the stiltedness away, and it does. A fairly silly story does suit the atmosphere quite well, I think.
Yeah, I always felt the overall story of Resident Evil, was better than the individual moments that happen in it, like the interactions with the characters and stuff like that. Right. Just the overall, like the viruses and the conspiracies and the stuff like that was always the draw, and the moment to moment character interactions weren't that great. I think probably 4 and 5, I didn't play too much of 6, are probably the best in that respect. Like the dialogue and the characters talking and stuff like that. But yeah, going back and playing 1 especially and seeing some of the choices they make around that here didn't really do it for me. But at the same time, I did enjoy the overall story, like I said, the conspiracy and what's going on behind the curtain and I think it was done a little bit too quickly and a little bit too forced, but the story of the Birkins was pretty good.
How creepy is Chief Irons reading through the notes? Have you got to Chief Irons yet?
He's in Claire, right? Claire's playthrough.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have not.
Oh, good Lord. Wait till you get some of that stuff.
I've seen some cutscenes, yeah.
It's surprisingly dark, and it's surprisingly like this is supposed to be Resident Evil, be cheesy.
Yeah, so that's an example of what we were talking about earlier, when of differences between the two playthroughs. Like that's a character that doesn't even exist in Leon's playthrough.
Yeah, it's taken over by a different thing.
Okay,
that's a very good set piece actually.
So I'm gonna try and squeeze this in because I know we want to get to God Eater and wrap it up. Ooh. But so post completing Leon's campaign and thinking back on it as I usually do with games, like I before I like jump on something and I say this is the best game ever or something like that, I let it kind of stew and think about it. The more I thought about this game, the more I kind of had the issue that we were talking about earlier with Far Cry, where I started to see the systems and everything, like when you first start playing it, it seems like, oh man, these puzzles are awesome. I got to find and collect these things and put them in the right spot or solve these little puzzles and stuff like that. And the more I see it as authored content, even in the situations where you're stocked up on ammo and you're like, oh man, I'm ready to fucking kill whatever comes my way. And then you go into a room and every zombie takes 10 headshots to go down. And or that is immediately when you find a licker and have to deal with him in some sort of way, whatever it may be. So then all of a sudden this huge stockpile of ammo you have is completely pointless. You end up wasting it. You end up spending it in some dumb way. And even with a little bit with the Mr. X, like I was saying, when you knew that like you needed to get to this particular place and you knew how to get there, you go this way, you go up the stairs, you go through this door and you're there, and then Mr. X is going to be on the other side of that door. So then you have to figure it out a different way. And the more I thought about it, the more I felt that it was a little bit too on the nose with that kind of stuff, a little bit too obvious in the way that it was building its encounters and stuff like that. And then when I start doing that, it's kind of like the problem in general that I have with horror is that once you break it down and analyze it and understand how it works, it stops being effective. And that's kind of where I ended up landing with this game. Like, it's almost too perfectly built, if that makes any sense. Like,
It's very video game.
it is.
It's
It's extremely
absolutely a
video
video
game, and
game.
it feels very crafted. Like, they spent so much time, making every like almost like they had this game done for like 2 years and all they did was play test, right? So they knew exactly where every single person was going to go and planned it, planned it accordingly. To the point where, so Derek, you were talking earlier about the liquor that always that suddenly showed up. Am I right in saying that that was where you had just blown up that C4? Yeah. So in that particular part, the door that you probably came in from, has a filing cabinet pushed over it. And you can't get out that way. You can't run past it. You quit, but when you load back in, don't try to go through that door because you're not going to be able to do it. Forcing you to go in a different way, right? And I don't think that that's bad, right? I don't think that that's bad game design. I think that there's absolutely 100% a way for that kind of stuff to go down. What I don't like, and it's not even that I don't like it, it's when the game is trying to fool you into thinking it isn't happening. And it's not working. Like I'm seeing through it completely. Like that filing cabinet, I saw that actually happen when I wasn't supposed to see it. I guess the best the best explanation would be for that. I don't know if I was supposed to or it just happened to be the way that I was looking at it. It's just things like that.
The canned nature.
Yeah, it almost feels like it because a lot of this feels like a Metroidvania in a sense where you're unlocking new ways to traverse the police station, clearing out the map, and you're not getting abilities, but you're getting like tools in order to unlock doors and stuff like that. And then they're closing those doors, and they do it very frequently. They do it, especially in the police station. The police station is obviously the where they spent the most time with this game. Once you go down in the sewers, it's very linear, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's a puzzle there. There's a pretty good puzzle with the chess pieces that took me a while to find everything and make sure I had cleared out everything. But it is a lot more linear than the police station is. You know, down there, it didn't. These kinds of things didn't quite rear their head as much as they did when I was in the police station, where there was this kind of more illusion to freedom. And then once you start to realize that, you're like, no, actually, all this is planned, and they knew I was going to be going here and doing this. And and it was just like that was kind of like that, and I don't think the game ends on a strong note just in general. Like it kind of wraps up real quick, and I think the environment,
you won't get the ending until 2. That's kind of a truncated version of the ending you get at the end of 2. Okay. So you're not really getting the end of the game, which is not very satisfying if you don't know that.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I just thought I was like, okay, all done, wrapped up.
Now, there's an extension of that. That's all I'll say. There's an extension of that. It will still happen. It will still play out, but there's a big extension of that.
Okay.
But, yeah, but you don't know that. So that is it's one of those things where, they're going to sound a bit hyperbolic, it's probably, as AAA games go, it's probably one of the best fan service games ever made, but to its detriment. Kind of, it's so fan service that it takes the element of kind of freedom out of it. The set pieces, it sets you up those set pieces of kind of that area you knew you wanted to go down, you now can't because the helicopter's crashed through. Now you need to get the beast to push it over to so you can get back through. All that canned stuff is great for fan service, but as you say, it takes away that kind of you can see the seams. If you're not giddy for that, you can see the seams.
It's definitely not, it like that helicopter thing is, I don't have a problem with that. That's so obvious.
Yeah. It's just an example. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's when it's trying to trick you into thinking that this is some sort of dynamic thing that's going on, and it's clearly not.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like
that makes you giddy if you're a fan, but if you're not, it's just like, well, I could see, like you say, you saw it fall. You can see the gimmick. You can see the wires.
Right. Yeah. So, I guess, from the original, let's just focus on that scenario. Is that something that happened, that scenario in the prison, that jail, where you get the medallion, is that something that happens in the original?
No, not the puzzle. That puzzle doesn't happen.
But does the room happen? The way that unfolds?
What, with Ben? You go down there and see Ben, the what's it, who's it called? To some extent, yeah, there's dogs instead of zombies, but you do go there and you meet the reporter, who then gets.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when you blow the C4, and to get into that little room where you get the medallion out of the. Mm-hmm. This is way back at the police station.
Oh right, okay. Sorry, I thought you said the jail cell. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a jail. There is a jail cell there because some guy had lock people up, and maybe it's an evidence locker.
Oh, I know
locker.
What you mean. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Does that happen where the bookcase falls and the liquor shows up, and is that completely new? Because I don't know.
No. But there are things. It's they're getting boring. But that whole thing of putting all of those coins into that fountain.
Yeah.
It's kind of very simplified in the middle. It's just one you have to go and get to put in there. It's just one where you have to spread it out. So no, that's not in there, but that area is there. But there will be instances like that where you see something that will trap you, like that you will, you know, like a ramification from that. You know, when you're walking around, for instance, and you see the door in the library on the top floor that you can go to,
yeah,
and it cheats you and it makes you fall through the floor.
Yeah.
That kind of, and then it gives you that canned loop of, well, now I can't ever go around there until I solve the bookcase puzzle.
Right.
That's there. That's all. Okay. That's there in the original. So that's another thing where it's like, well, now I see that set up for that's taking that kind of, you know what I mean? So that is there. The way you get around it is slightly different, but that set piece is there. So that's there for the fans. Oh, the thing where you fall through the floor. There's a different resolution to that.
Yeah.
Without wishing to get boring, the chess puzzle that you get in the sewers is actually in that room behind the bookcases in the original version.
Oh, okay.
It's actually all squashed out. There's a lot of things that are kind of extended.
Yeah. Yeah, and for those specific things like the falling through the floor and stuff like that, that's an obvious thing that is a scripted event that's going to happen. And like I said before, my issue is where it tries to create this illusion of creating these dynamic encounters, and it just doesn't, it starts to fall apart when I start thinking about it a lot and being like, oh, they had just given me all this ammo, so this really wasn't a dynamic encounter. This was either they put those things there on purpose to make me use up all my ammo, or they spiked the zombies, as it were, and they calculated how much ammo I had in my inventory, and then bumped up the or lowered the percentage on me getting like quick kills with the headshots and stuff like that. Because like I said, it would be like four zombies in a row where it would take like four or five shots to take them down, versus if I was low on ammo, I would get this feeling of like, oh, I lucked out because this one time I only used one handgun round and it just happened to blow his head apart. And I obviously I can't prove that. I could if I really wanted to waste a whole bunch of time analyzing all the encounters and stuff like that. But it almost feels like that there's something going on in the background where it's calculating that kind of stuff, as opposed to it just being a random chance.
Maybe.
Like I don't know
about individual enemies like that. I'm not sure about individual enemies like that.
There has to be something going on in the background deciding whether or not this particular zombie takes, you know, two shots or five shots, right? There has to be some sort of calculation going on, whether it just be a percentage on like critical hit or something like that, or there's a little bit more.
Is there a super sweet spot? Maybe that might be something you might find possibly more when you play on a PC. Maybe kind of a proper like right there, because you can shred even with a shotgun. If you don't get right at the top, you'll just shred their face and then their skin comes off. So if you're not getting that critical head, it's kind of, there are variables within that. So
yeah, it could be. I just don't know. That's what it felt like to me. It always just felt like I'd stock up with that ammo, and then I'd get into a room and I'd end up spending it all.
Yeah.
And then like the moments where I was low on ammo, it felt like I was getting more of those, you know.
Particularly the sewers,
more of that luck.
Not to really run low. I think you really are running low on ammo by the time you get out of the station for a while.
Yeah. Especially in the garage area, I was really low on ammo in that area. So that's where I am right there, and I'd be interested to see if somebody like does a deep dive into that, you know, with everybody.
I was just gonna say that might be something that would be interesting to.
Like a real big analysis on it to see if there's any sort of calculations going on in the back, or if it's just a matter of, you know, you hit this particular spot and it does more damage or whatever the case is, with everybody on YouTube out there.
Yeah, that'll be something if you want to watch some speed runs to see how they go through and see what exactly they're doing when they have to pick people off. So obviously, the people can finish this in an hour, because there is a very specific linear way and exactly the right one to shoot them in the leg. They break it down to an exact science of how to speed, but it's kind of built into the game. So if you watch those and then you watch a speed bunny, you see if they do take a headshot, whether it's a kind of a scripted thing or not, probably looking at a speed bunny will help you out with that one.
Yeah, and they'd also be, if you're watching it on like Games Done Quick or something like that, they may have some narrative to go along with that to be like, you know, actually, this is all RNG, and I don't know if I'm going to hit this or not, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Definitely worth having a look at some of those speedruns. They're quite good, especially for 4. They show you all the wrinkles about that, of which ones to clip, which ones are going to... 4 does it, but then 4 is much more basic engine.
Yeah.
4 has ones where you know they're going to go, you know they're going to pop. You know which ones are going to have the parasites inside and which ones aren't going to have the parasites inside.
Right.
So,
yeah. 4, I always felt like that was... Like, I've played through that game so many times that I know...
Yeah.
Like, I know where all the enemies are going to be, and I know which ones are going to be what, and I know the tricks it's playing and the tricks it's not playing.
Yeah, but that's a much more, less advanced, or much less advanced sort of game. But yeah.
All right.
Good stuff.
So I guess that's going to wrap up Resident Evil 2. Derek?
Yes.
What is God Eater 3?
Okay, so God Eater 3. That's my question,
Derek. What is God Eater 3?
It's exactly that. What is it? No, so God Eater is essentially anime Monster Hunter. Like, the simplest breakdown of it is that the best way would be it's just more of a simplified version of playing Monster Hunter in an anime style. You're still pretty much hunting big beast. But instead of just being a hunter, you're a specially engineered human that can kind of control weapons, and you have, like, some of the monster blood already in you.
Okay.
So that's kind of the premises there, that you're the only one able to go out and fight these monsters, where it's not like you're just an everyday hunter, anybody can go out and fight these things. Okay. Like, you're specifically designed to go out and handle these situations. Usually they're raised as kids, and they're a lot younger characters, so a lot of your characters are in, like, the teens to early 20s.
Right, so anime.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. this was actually the first one that wasn't designed for handheld first. The other ones that came out were always designed towards, like, the PSP and the Vita first. They were designed for that and then ported to consoles, to where this was the first time that one was designed just straight for the console, because the Vita and PSP are no longer a mainstream thing. This was the first one that they changed their developer. So before, a company called Shift was the one that developed and took care of everything, to where now Marvel Studios took over. And then, if you're familiar with anime, I'm pretty sure I'm saying this company's name wrong, but it's UFO Table. I'm pretty sure there's a correct way to announce it. But they did the intro for it. Okay. A big studio for, I'd say, hosting developing anime was the one that actually designed the intro to this game. Yeah, so, like I said, it's you're fighting these huge monsters known as Origami. They kind of introduced a bigger one called Ash Origami, which are a lot stronger. I think the previous games were 3 players, so you'd go out with your character and then 2 others, where this one's designed around 4, okay. And then later it introduces, like, a bigger scale battle for multiplayer, where it's 8 characters go in, and you're trying to fight one of these big, Origami creatures.
So when it's 4 players, is that just single player, and you have, like, a party?
No, this one, there's actually multiplayer, too. So you can play the game entirely single player and bring 4 AI-controlled characters with you that you'll meet along the way. Mm-hmm. Or you can go in with 3 of your other friends and take on everything as well.
Okay.
Is it just sword and sorcery, or, like, Monster Hunter, is there ballistic stuff as well?
There's some. So the difference between this is every person, their god arcs is what your weapon's called. It has 3 different modes. So you have your blade or sword or axe or like one character has like kind of like a dual dagger system. They have that mode, so essentially your blade mode. And then you also have a gun mode, which consists of you could have a shotgun, an assault rifle, a minigun, a laser rifle. There's a couple different variations that you can create. And then you also have a shield that you can design as well. And this all works together. So while you're out there, you can be hitting it with that. All of a sudden, it goes up in the air and you need to drop it down. You could switch to your gun real quick, hit that. It'll drop down and switch back to your blade type weapon and try to hit that. Or once you start learning enemy patterns, if you see one go to swing, you can do another button combination and it turns into a giant shield that protects you. So it kind of mixes up the formula a little bit to where you're more versatile than you are in Monster Hunter, where you kind of go out with this loadout and you need to do it, where here you have all the tools for every situation already. And then with the gun modes too, there's different types of bullets you can have. So you can have like a fire bullet, a frost bullet, a lightning bullet, an acid bullet. But then as you're gaining materials and crafting components, you can create your own custom bullet, which takes Oracle points to fire. So you can create this like crazy ass bullet that shoots out of a shotgun, but then it turns into four laser beams and some other crazy stuff and explodes all over. But you may only be able to shoot one or two because it takes so much of this oracle power that you gain from fighting these creatures to take them out. So the crafting in the game is a little bit more in depth and less straightforward than it is in Monster Hunter. Because you can craft all your weapons, every component. So like your blade part you can craft, your shield you can craft, the gun you can craft, and then you can create your own special crazy ammo that somebody else might not have. Outside of just using the standard ones that they give it, wherever it's just straight fire or straight ice or straight lightning. To where then you can start mixing them up and then go from there.
Like how elaborate does that get? Like how many different attributes can you assign to the ammo? Like, are we talking about like a handful, or are we talking about like 20?
I'd say it doesn't go super crazy. I would say it's somewhere around four, I believe. I think like the further you go on, the more you can unlock for what you can put in there. But usually it's around like three or four, because you kind of slot everything, and then that gives you an overall power percentage of how much power it takes to use.
All right,
So you
so
said they're quite
no,
neat. Oh, sorry, go on. Go ahead.
no, go ahead.
You said they've always been quite niche, like handheld only, kind of like quite a small audience.
Yeah, they were.
Is the new one more accessible, being a bigger one? But is it kind of more entry, like Monster Hunter World is quite entry level friendly to play. Is God Eater 3 like
Yeah.
that?
It's still as friendly as it was on the handheld and previous entries. Like they kind of like that formula, the map formula and your interaction formula is essentially the same. It's just now solely being developed on a console.
Oh,
It's
okay.
a lot more friendly. Like combos actually hit. You can actually pull off and do what you want to do to where just a port of it or trying to play it on this handheld device, it might lag or stutter some and might not quite do what you want it to do. So it, I'd say the best way is it applies a polish to it rather from the previous entries, because like the last one that came out was God Eater 2 Rage Burst, was the remake of it, including everything for the PlayStation 4. But it was hot garbage.
That's the one to start with.
Now you come into God Eater 3 and everything's polished and worked and having a better reception. I think in Japan it got a 32 out of 40 from one of the big companies that reviews this game out there.
Probably Famitsu, I would have said.
That sounds
Yes.
like a
Yep.
Famitsu.
That's exactly
It's
what it
cool.
was here. The writing was kind of small, so I couldn't quite see what it had said.
Think
But
that's their IGN. If
is
you
I believe so.
it's Famitsu,
Is that the new scale IGN is going for? They rate everything out of 40?
Maybe. So we got
7 out of 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Metacritic gave it a 71 out of 100. So its reception is higher than previous one, but it's also like got that kind of little cult following. Like, if you know God Eater, you know what you're getting into. You know, it's a Monster Hunter-esque game because it came out a couple years after, I believe, the first one or two Monster Hunters came out.
Yeah, so that was the main narrative around it. I heard was that it was getting a positive reception, and that it was kind of like Monster Hunter. So those were the big touchstones that I picked up on. It's kind of interesting that both those series took their first step away from like a handheld system and moved over to a big to the home console. Within a short amount of time of each other, because Monster Hunter, I guess, probably came out like almost a year before, right? Like it had to be a year or two
before the first Monster Hunter came out, and then
I mean Monster Hunter World came out a year before God Eater 3.
Yeah, I'd say about like a year, year and a half ish.
Yeah, because it was end of January.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting that the two series kind of decided to make that jump around the same time.
I guess because
So overall, you're enjoying your time.
Yeah, it's been a lot more enjoyable to play and go through. Like, it has its stuff that's really tedious. Like, sometimes after every mission, you have to go through and search for like a character to talk to in this like mobile home base you're in. And it's got three different levels. You have the bridge where you select your missions, and then you have like the living quarters, and then you just have like some cargo areas. So sometimes you have to go through and visit every single room to see who's got a little bubble atop their head, and then talk to them. It happens a little more than it should.
There's no map to look to see if somebody's got an icon for you or something like that.
Yeah, no, you just kind of like, what'll happen is you go, you're like, you come back from mission, you're like, all right, I need to get another mission. So you talk to the girl, Amy, who assigns the missions for you, because you're basically contracted to do these.
Yep.
And she'll be like, oh, sorry, the system's down right now. And then all of a sudden, you know, great, now I've got to go search this entire place for somebody to talk to. Sometimes you can kind of guess who it's going to be, depending if it was like a story event or something that just happened, then you kind of know where the main characters are.
Yeah.
Then sometimes it's not. And it seems to kind of like, at least in the beginning where I'm still at, it seems to happen a lot to where it's like, are you kidding me? So that'd be like the one big drawback to it is, even though it's not though too, because everything's like nicely dialogued. The voice acting's great. Some of the stuff can be like, okay, why did we have this conversation? And the other ones are like, oh, cool, you're really feeling what this character's feeling, because that's usually what they are, more personal conversations about what's going on.
It just sounds like it's kind of a bummer that they weren't a little bit more straightforward with telling you where you need to go in order to get your next assignment or whatever.
Yeah, like you get your assignment from the same place. It kind of stops you from getting the next one because it wants you to go talk to somebody.
Oh, okay.
And just have interactions outside of just straight going mission.
But like it should have just brought you right to there when you went to your hub area, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, or kind of like it could have been played out in a better way.
Yeah.
Make it feel more natural. Like it's not very natural feeling.
Right. Like, oh, shit, all of a sudden the system's down. You better go talk to Bob.
Yeah, and it'll, like, slightly change it. Like, oh, the system's down. Oh, this time we have interference.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're getting ready for this next big battle for tomorrow, so go do something and then come back.
Yeah, go hang out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's I could see how that could get frustrating. So, just real quick, few comparisons to Monster Hunter. Are you going into like the same general play areas over and over again, or are they all discrete?
Not every single one's discrete. You'll find it at times where you might go into the same sort of looking area with a slight tweak.
Okay.
over and over again.
Are they as open as Monster Hunter?
As far as comparing it to World, it's not as open. It's more of a linear, like, there'll be like an open space, and then there's some more like narrow ways you can go around, just depending how it's designed. It's not extremely open, but it's not like you're just stuck on a straight linear path. It kind of gives you a little options.
Okay.
And more like the older Monster Hunters.
What was
more
that?
Like the previous, more like the older Monster Hunters, which is fairly corridor.
Like they've kind of kept, like I said, they kind of kept the same map features and way the game plays and it's handled. Mm. It just now it's more, it just works together better. It feels better. It handles and responds a lot better.
Yeah.
I guess the question I'm really getting at there is when you're going out and fighting these monsters in these areas, is there anything else to do there other than fight those monsters?
Generally, you're just pretty much fighting the monsters. Some areas you'll have items to pick up, and you'll start learning those spots where there are. So sometimes you want to grab them, sometimes you don't. Because it's pretty simplified to where straightforward. You want to fight these monsters. As soon as you kill the monster, if it's not like your main one, you've got like maybe 30, 40 seconds before it disappears to where you can use your god arc to essentially eat it. You'll turn your weapon into a giant head and you'll chomp down on it. And that's how you get your crafting materials from different monsters.
And that's how they get the name.
Yep. Yep. That sums up that right there.
All right. I didn't know if this was going to be one of those that the name makes sense or it doesn't.
No, the straight up makes sense. Okay. You're using these god arcs, they have this eater ability. They added in some like more smaller systems too, to where they now have this Excel system. And before they had a burst system, and they've renamed it now an engage system, so you can kind of like link up with another, like if it's an AI partner or somebody there, you can link up, and then all of a sudden you get like a bonus. Essentially, some might be an attack bonus, or others are like, if you use a healing item, you'll heal more. And they just kind of like stack on top of each other, but it's pretty nice and pretty intricate the way they do it. Because like some will be attack, some will be healing, and then your different meters are filling up at different times. So.
Okay, cool.
It's just kind of, it gives it a fresh new feel to it. And then one of the things that I came across too when I was playing to get the footage for this was I came across my first assault mission, which is new, which is an, like I said, an 8-player battle, but it's eight human players. So it's a multiplayer feature only, but you go in there, you've got a target, and it's all of you going after this. So that was a lot of fun. It worked well. Everybody connected in. There wasn't any lag at all.
Ooh.
All right, cool. So that adds a little bit. Is that sort of like in-game stuff, or is that kind of thrown into the middle of it?
It kind of got thrown into the middle of it. Like I said, I'm still early on because you get a decent amount of missions to do. That's where like the recycling of areas come in. Is you get there's a good group of monsters and a bunch of different ones and the way they do the story. So you kind of just deal with the same area showing up a couple times in a row, but you know you might be getting different monsters in it. So yeah, but you're fighting a different monster or a medium or larger sized one might show up, or there might just be a bunch of smaller monsters. So they keep it mixed up fairly well to where it doesn't get as repetitive feeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's good to have. You know, another one of those kind of Monster Hunter-ish games out there because of how successful the Monster Hunter World was. I think there's room for you know, a variety of them to keep all of them on their toes. And I'm glad to see that this one's getting a good reception.
Yeah, and you kind of get to hit your different audience because then there's people that... Because for God Eater 2, there was actually a short anime series that coincided with it.
Okay.
But it was fantastic. like it was really, really short, like 6 episodes, and it just made you want like a lot more of that because you really connected with the characters, and then you're alongside these characters in the game. So I'm not sure if that's something they'll revisit in the future, especially with an anime studio having done their like complete intro to the game, or it wasn't handled by the development studio.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Do you think it has a chance to break out like well did? Or do you think it's not generally built like that because it's so tied into an existing franchise and stuff, isn't it? And it's not quite as maybe friendly as World.
Like I said, it's a little bit more simplified than playing Monster Hunter. It's more straightforward with some of the things, but then like getting into the crafting, it's a little bit more intricate. Because like in World, you're just crafting towards certain weapons that you want to get. To where this one now, there's a lot of the same weapon, but then there's like different types of that weapon. And then you can go into that even more and add, which I should have mentioned earlier, you can add skills to your weapon. And then I just opened up another slot. So once these skills leveled up so far, I can add another skill onto the end of that. So when I'm comboing, you can change up your combo system like that too. Which is why this one felt better, because before you'd get these combos, but they wouldn't play well together. Where this, everything actually plays well, is connected. You can pull off your combos and be satisfied with what you just did.
Well, hopefully it breaks out.
Yeah, I'd like to see it too, because it's got a lot of good ideas behind it. You know, the lore of the origami and the new ash storms they're talking about. And your character, which is called an age, about how you're the only one able to go out, but you're designed to go out and fight these things. And you know that, like, since a child, you were born with the origami blood in you that could handle the oracle cells. And then you can essentially control this god eater that you're given and go out there and fight these things. And you know you're trying to save mankind. You're trying to help people.
Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
I think this one was pretty much straightforward. You know, it's just a fun hack and slash that if you like those kind of grindy collection crafting games, it's a real easy one to slide right into. Maybe a little bit more easier than Monster Hunter, because Monster Hunter kind of required you to have those other people with you. If you were trying to take on like the bigger ones, unless you like completely loaded yourself out to go do one certain thing, to where this, you kind of got that full single player approach to it if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Ooh.
All right. So, yeah, if you're interested in God Eater, that's Derek's take on it. And I think what we're going to do is wrap it up with a little discussion about what we're looking forward to coming up. Lee, what do you have on your plate, so to speak?
Oh, coming up, I've got Into the Week, there's Devil May Cry 5, which I'm very interested in. That's looking promising. I've got Left Alive, which is sitting here now, which is the Square Enix. It's not really Metal Gear, but it looks like Metal Gear game. It's not had a very good reception.
Yeah,
but I'm not sure whether that's
some questions about the reception over. Because I guess it's out in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it gameplay or is it taste sort of thing that we haven't really quite got to grips yet, because nobody in the West has probably seen it. So that's coming out. It's a bit of a busy March, really. Then you've got Division coming soon, which I'm going to be dipping into. There's a game called Uppers, which probably won't interest many people, but it's like a Streets of Rage 3D-ish type thing going on. There's a lot of stuff coming around.
Yeah, I think it's not quite as busy as February, but it is. I looked at the calendar, and there's a bit going on. I'm interested in seeing what Left Alive turns into, because what I saw, what did interest me with some of the Metal Gear aspects of it, but with obviously a different kind of story. And there was definitely some differences going on there. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm going to keep going through Astroneer, and I'll have more complete thoughts on that at a later date. I'm going to be on Division as well. That's all I can think of short term. sure there's something I'm missing. Maybe some indie game will sneak in there. Oh, well, one game that I was interested in that I'm not sure if I'm gonna get right now or if I'm gonna hold off. Evergate, something along those lines. I wish I had remembered. It's one of those generic names that you just can't. It's like just two words thrown together, and it's like you could have come up with a better name than that. But it's basically it's photo mode the game. Like the whole game is you kind of walking around this kind of like Skyrim looking. I mean, not Skyrim, but more Oblivion. Everything's more green than Skyrim is. And you're talking to these people, and they're just asking you to capture photos of certain scenes. And so you just kind of it's all first person. You kind of walk around, you set up the scene like they want these three buildings in a scene, and then you paint the picture, so to speak. And that's all the game is. It's like an open world. You walk around there, you meet these people. So it's like a chill, kind of like laid back, kind of open world game, where you're just kind of like taking screenshots the whole time. I
Which is your
saw,
thing.
yeah,
You do that in
exactly.
games that are
Right,
based
yeah.
around that.
I saw some gameplay of it. I had heard about it a little bit, but then it was all of a sudden out. It's only on PC right now, and I might check that out. I don't know.
Ryan Shepherd's again coming soon.
Right, yeah. Well, Ashnir's kind of filling that hole right now. So I don't know if there's room for two just kind of chill out and
Ryan's mind's gonna explode.
look out on the horizon games, but we'll see.
Oh,
Derek,
another March one
oh
we forgot
yeah.
about. Sinking City, March.
Oh yeah, that's
Oh,
coming
that
out.
comes out.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, March
Yeah.
20. I thought it was May, but you said it was March. So
Yeah,
March
it's
20 something.
26th, I think, end of March. So that yeah,
Nice.
that looks really good. That's the
Keep an eye on that one.
like H.P. Lovecraft style game, investigation game with a little bit of action mixed in. Yeah, I think we're all kind of looking forward to that one. Same as the Division 2.
Yeah.
Anything specific that you're looking at there, Derek?
I'm pretty sure I'm gonna dive into Left Alive 2, even though we haven't heard too much great stuff about it, but it still interests me enough that I want to grab it and play through and compare it with what other people are saying.
Okay.
The only other one I got coming that's different kind of from what we're all looking at, like, I've already got Division 2 Ultimate pre-ordered, so we'll be on that with, I think I get 3-day early access because of that too.
Oh, fancy.
Ooh.
So we'll see about that. And then I think it's March 19th. Fate/Extella Stella Link comes out, which will be the second of their the Fate series hack and slash, so another anime game.
Okay. Sounds like an anime game.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, so that's what you can look forward to coming up on Voxel Viewpoints. And just to wrap it up, you can follow us at voxelvoice.com/YouTube. We're on iTunes and Google Play. We're still working on getting on Spotify and a couple of other places. And make sure you join the Facebook group. So you can stay up to date with all of the conversations we're having there. Derek, you want to drop your info?
Yeah, and I'm from Murder Monkeys Gaming. You can find me at twitch.tv/murdermonkeysgaming and on YouTube if you just search Murder Monkeys Gaming. But like I always say too, Voxel Voice is my home. It's a great community, so there's no reason for me to have my own Facebook group when these are the people that I interact with and do everything with anyway.
Cool. And Lee, what are you planning on streaming this week?
I'll probably look into Left Alive. Depending on whether I get early enough, I'll probably do some Devil May Cry 5.
Okay.
If that drops on Thursday instead of Friday.
Sure.
But we'll see how
Okay.
that one goes. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So look forward to that. And I think that's gonna wrap us up. Oh, Derek, do you know what you're? Oh, you're gonna be trying to do Left Alive on Tuesday, right?
Yes, I'm like 80% sure I should be checking that out a little bit. So,
Okay, so
get
maybe
a
you can
couple
take a look at
interactions
that
for that.
when he takes over on Tuesday night. That would be the Facebook page, facebook.com/voxelvoice. So with all that said and done, I guess we'll catch y'all next time.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good evening.
Peace.